you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there. Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast.
I've really gotten into podcasts since we started this. Did you know the number one podcast in The Good Place is Mozart and Jimi Hendrix talking about music? And the number one podcast in The Bad Place is Joseph Stalin recapping The Bachelor.
Hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. I play Sean. Today we're talking about Chapter 31, Season 3, Episode 4, Jeremy Baramy, directed by Trent O'Donnell, written by Megan Amram, including guest cast Ben Lawson, Ben Gerrans, Olivia Mackenzie Smith, Seychelle Brown, Judah Simard, Nathan Lovejoy, Benjamin Watts, Paul Tazzoni, Lisa Fernandez, Kathy Liu, Ryan Quintal, and Liz Deverly. After attempting to lie to the humans about their identities and the magical door, Michael and Janet come clean, describing their true motives, the four humans' long and complicated history together, and the afterlife timeline. They explain that the four are doomed now, no matter what, due to this knowledge. Eleanor heads off by herself, determined to go back to her old ways of just looking out for number one, but is sidetracked when she finds a missing wallet and can't help but get it back to its owner. Chidi spirals out, taking a deep dive into nihilism, and ends up ultimately delivering a crazed lecture while eating a vat of peeps and chili. Tahani and Jason explore various creative ways of doling out Tahani's life savings. Meanwhile, Michael and Janet write up a manifesto of what they've learned, knowing they failed, but hoping some other afterlife beings will be able to improve the system. Ultimately, Eleanor comes up with an idea for the group, to form a soul squad and help the undoomed people they care about get into the good place. My guests today are editor of the episode, Eric Kissack, writer of the episode, Megan Amram, and Darcy Carden, who plays Janet. Darcy, Megan, and Eric, welcome. Everything is... Who cares?
Aww.
You guys, full disclosure, this show is growing on me. when last we left our heroes, Michael and Janet had a magical space door open. They had a plan that Janet was going to hold it open and Michael was going to try to break into the thing. And you've done it again. You completely gummed up the works with a series finale right at the beginning of a season kind of thing.
It's very fun because we started out on Earth, obviously, and I, as one of the writers, I get to know what's happening, and this is the first episode in the season, really, where there's a major turn in the story.
Huge, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is, like, things are out of control for Michael and Janet already. They're having to, you know, to pivot and make changes, but right away, they're like, hey, dude, what's that space door, like, now they either have to kill them or explain, right? It's huge what happens, right?
Michael does offer up the suggestion to kill all the humans, and definitely, I would say a bunch of us wanted that to be a much more serious consideration.
Is that true?
Yes, I wanted Michael to really talk at length about how he was going to kill them, how easy. I mean, he says it would be easy. You just take the juice out and
they're
then they're dead.
Mostly goo and juice.
Which is what I firmly believe about the human body.
Yeah, that is true.
You have a limited understanding of
anatomy. Stupid and simple.
Not really.
Yeah. No, that's exactly
what
it is.
She's not wrong at all.
My mom's a doctor.
Right. Yeah.
And no, but I just Michael just carefully talking about how fragile they all are and how fatal he could be, I think would be great.
But I'm getting ahead of myself, but I did think it was really funny. Like in this episode, Chidi says, you know, so there's a heaven and a hell, and Michael says it's not your classic Christian version of hell. And also, a tremendous hit is taken at like the design of the universe. Like human bodies aren't built very well.
Right.
It's kind of a funny dig, I think.
I would say, like, that's something that I personally am kind of obsessed with.
Human bodies.
Is, like, if you break it down, how simplistic it is that they're just, like, wet meat.
Yeah.
So.
Wet meat that's supposed to last for, like, 100 years.
I'm sort of a romantic. But, yeah, it's wet meat that hangs around for 100 years, and then you better throw that in the dirt.
Yeah, you gotta bury that.
What I love about that moment, there's a few moments in the show where I realize, oh, right, Michael's just wearing a human skin suit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's not.
Yes.
And then I'm like, what does Michael look like?
Michael's leather face underneath.
And it's
October when we're recording this.
Spooky,
so I'm in a spooky mood.
Sure. But yeah, I actually was in the edit room the other day with Mike, and I asked him what Michael really looks like, and he would not tell me.
But he knows?
He seemed to indicate that he knows.
Because he thinks it's Mike Schur. It's because he thinks it's just him
underneath.
Peekaboo.
Yeah.
I thought it was really funny early on, and sort of a strangely strong moment for Jason, that Jason's like, wait a second, I know this guy. That's Zach Pizzazz.
Yeah.
Like, the likelihood of him remembering that is
right.
Zero. And it's a really strong thing. Chidi says, no, that's the librarian from the university. Tani says, I know him as Gordon Indigo. Eleanor does not weigh in on it at all. Does she have any memory?
I mean, as someone who, like, barely recognizes, like, my dear friends.
Yeah, but you have, like, face blindness.
Yeah. That's right, person I know. But it is very impressive to me that they all remembered him. But he was a very significant part of their lives. And Eleanor was drunk when she met him at the bar.
And it was a year ago, right? Over a year ago.
Yeah.
It also makes sense that Eleanor is the most self-centered
she
of
would
the
not
four.
Remember.
So she probably just, like, other people... You know.
Yeah, she doesn't remember.
I guess so.
Though they should all be sure. Like, he looks just like Ted Danson.
Yeah,
that's
crazy
like
that they don't
say
that.
Right. Should remember.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting thing. You guys once again make great misuse or abuse of TV tropes where Michael's like, give us just a second. How do we get out of this? And Janet says, like, they've overheard us lay out the structure of the universe. They've seen this door. Like, I think we're there. And Michael says, you're forgetting one crucial piece of information. Mm-hmm. And then he's immediately out of control. Like, you are, right? Like, you are forgetting a crucial piece. It's these are really fun interactions that you and Ted get to have in this episode. Like, it's got weight. It's got gravity. Like, it's a big, fat thing.
It sort of felt like a big, fat thing, too.
It
was fun. It was really fun to do. It's always obviously so insane to experience it for real with your own eyeballs looking out and then also see it later all cut together with like music and stuff.
And because, special effects.
Yeah. Because in my mind, those scenes were just looking out my eyeballs into Ted's face.
Your gooey, juicy eyeballs.
Yeah. I mean, I know this is like pretty obvious, but it is a weird thing. I guess anything filmed when you experience it there for real. What your point of view is your little eyeballs looking out into
are
the
you
other?
Just back from Burning Man? What's happening? I don't understand what's happening.
No, but do you know what I mean?
I do.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't because I'm not an actor.
No, but okay, like, think about it.
Sure, no, but I can imagine.
Yeah, just think about it for 10 to 20 minutes and then just come back.
Yeah.
But I was curious about this, Darcy. Yeah. Do you ever go to the monitor and sort of see how a take played or that kind of thing? Like, does that ever help you see the scene?
Sometimes it does, but... Yeah, like, so, you know, on any set, there would be, you could look into any of the cameras, their little monitors, or there's, like, something called Video Village where there's all the different angles on different monitors set up, which is, like, where our smart people would
yeah, the bosses.
Yeah, the bosses sit and watch. I do occasionally look. No, I don't. I mean, like, look at something that I am about to be in or something.
Yeah.
Not really.
Or actually, see a performance that you just did or something like that.
I never do.
Mostly for cool stuff. Like, we've done that on stunts, I feel in my career. Like, you'll go back and go, like, did it work? Like,
right, that's
you know,
true. That's
yeah,
true.
For something like the crashing of a wall of books or something.
Yeah. But there's something like, I know that there you can do that. You can go up to... Who's in charge of that?
Playback.
Yeah, go up to playback and say, can I watch
can
that back?
That? Yeah.
But man, doesn't that seem
they
so...
They hate it. Yeah.
Yeah, and wouldn't that be so...
It's a little ego-y, I think.
Ego-y,
yeah.
One of the fun things about the beginning of this episode is we do have this crazy door, which is very important because we wanted to make sure that the thing that the human saw was so crazy
yeah.
that there was no point
in— There's no going back.
Right.
Yeah, there's no going back. Like, because essentially when Michael tells them about the afterlife, he's dooming them, which is what the episode is about. And we wanted to make sure there was no other option.
Right. Right.
But it is a funny thing. You're watching it being shot and you're like, okay, I guess it's going to be a crazy door or something.
Right.
Maybe it will look like a magic trick. And then you see it and you're like, oh no, if you saw that in real life,
that'd be
crazy.
Yeah, you've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's the Rubicon. Like you're yeah. there going, I just saw you inside out. Tell me everything.
Right.
It's pretty remarkable. Michael then says he's going to, he's like, fine, you got us. I'll tell you the truth. My name is Special Agent Rick Justice.
We really had a lot of fun with Michael's fake name.
Mostly named season 3 so far.
Okay, wait. Of all of his names, everybody has to pick their fave.
Okay.
Should we say it at the same time?
I think we should take turns.
Okay. Mine is Zach Pizzazz. It's okay if everybody's a Zach Pizzazz.
Sure.
Zach Pizzazz. We had a lot of fun with that.
Mine has to be Nathaniel Cookswell,
Cookswell's good. And Brain Man.
Charles Brainman is mine.
Charles Brainman is really good.
Yeah, which was one we don't see. It's cheating. Yeah. Like, I got a call from someone named Dr. Charles Brainman.
It's nice to have it said out loud.
Yeah.
It is like, I like seeing things dusting my shoulders off that like, The Good Place is one of the smartest shows on TV and then be like,
the dumbest.
Charles Brainman.
Well, it's also amazing that Michael is this incredibly, he's a genius who came up with a 15 million point plan to torture them in heaven, but when he gets to Earth, he's reduced to these like absurd names.
Real Sheldon.
He actually says he doesn't actually say in the second episode, I'm all out of sorts. I used to be great at lying.
Second.
That is something that we wanted to show is that like in the bad place, he was extremely confident because that was his job and where he had worked for a bajillion years. But and so lying in that capacity, he was comfortable with. Even though he clearly wasn't that good at it because the show exists. Mm-hmm. But on Earth, there's so many things going on.
Yeah.
He's terrible at it. I mean, so much so that he introduces Lisa Frenchie Fuqua and then says, just ask Janet anything. And they're like, yeah, who's Janet? He's like, oh, right. Like, and then he lets demons slip. And he's like, oh, no, that's real.
Yeah,
hang
he's
on.
Having a hard
he
time.
He says in right in front of them,
demons, that's
demons,
real.
Wait, that's real.
Yeah.
Ghouls. Like,
he's out of sorts.
He's editing in real time.
Yeah, he's having a real hard time.
But it's so great because it's got weight. Like, and that was one of the things that I started to mention, Darcy, that's fun to watch you like huddle with Michael because here when they're back upstairs in the mansion in the Airbnb, he goes, give me one more second. And you two huddle and he's like, okay, we should kill him. Okay. And you lay it out and you go, we're there. Like it's over. And Michael could get retired. Janet could get marbleized. And these two are going to the real bad place for Evs. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's sad. It's emotional.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
It's,
I mean, wasn't there, I guess just the episode before when he's like, he kind of does a similar thing, right? Where
yes. Oh, he says to you, yes, I'm sorry.
He's panicking. Like,
he's like, no, the only thing that matters are these four.
Yeah.
Like we have to.
Right.
Yeah. Michael and Janet have such a fun dynamic in this episode, but also in this little chunk of episodes because they are the odd ducks on Earth together.
Right.
And I always really like the attitude of like you guys discussing dumb stuff to do on Earth, like going to a Hertz rent-a-car or whatever. And like,
in this one, it's, I know it sounds, it's at the very bottom of the episode. I know it sounds touristy, but I'd love to visit a lens craft.
Yeah.
Place,
and
which
then
is
like,
unexpected.
So perfect.
And there, I think there were about 100 others.
Is that right?
Yeah. We had a lot. I mean, we shot a lot where we talked about.
It's hard to remember which ones are where.
Yeah.
Lens Crafters is so good. I think Matt Murray thought of that because it's like the exact thing that would be at the end of a mall. That's like how I imagine it. Like at the part of the mall that like not that many
the
people
shoe
are
repair.
Going
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The credit union and the shoe repair.
With all of the like switches in the, especially like the first and second season with Michael, I'm so glad that he really is tickled by human things, that was real.
Yeah.
That was like a real thing.
It is. It was a fun reveal when he lied about everything and showed himself to like have this calculating demeanor that he also really was just tickled.
Yeah.
Well, they also say, like, they say the best way to lie is to have like a nugget of truth or have as much truth in a lie as possible. And so you always like, so much of Michael's personality is actually who he really is. He really does have this. And it's also why this demon could really have switched, I think, you know, because all along he did have this real fascination and appreciation for humans. And so it
otherwise
sort of made sense.
Sort of gone out on a limb like that.
Exactly. Right? There's a moment right before the LensCrafters thing where Michael stands up and says, "Jenet, old friend." And it's just this really sweet little moment. And you just realize, like, wow, yeah, these people have been together for hundreds of years in the afterlife doing all these reboots. You know, they've been through so much. And so just that moment, I don't know, it gets me every time.
I like when Janet just holds food to be nice to Michael. Like,
did we do that on this episode?
We may have cut. They were at the Froyo.
Yeah. So let's talk about cut scenes. Are we allowed to?
Sure. Why not?
Okay. Because this one I can think of two. And they
and it's all Eric cutting them out,
just
brutal. So this was the hardest episode of the year to cut.
Okay.
And the reason is most episodes have an A story, a B story, maybe a C story.
Right.
This one had four separate stories that really sort of start together in the beginning and then break apart and then come back in. And we just could not figure out a way have them all in and preserve any kind of flow or rhythm or you know, give any the scenes their due if we kept them all in. So we basically had to sacrifice most of the Michael and Janet story. So apologies. But the good thing about this show is that, I don't know if you guys talked about this, but usually a few months after the episodes air, there is an extended version of the episode that's released. And the extended episode of this, extended version of this episode will be the longest one we've ever done.
Hell yeah.
And 2 hours, 40 minutes.
No, it's about 26 minutes, which is 5 minutes
that's
longer
long,
than
yeah,
usual.
Usually
it's like an additional
it's
two or minutes,
monologue.
You know. And it's so good. Like, this is like the extended version of this episode is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Should you cut that simultaneously? Like,
yes.
When you deliver the finished 21:30 episode, 21 minutes, 30 second episode, you then give the extended.
So,
what we
do is we get it down to 21:30, and then Mike and I sit there and we read the script. And we just go, oh, wow, we cut that out. And we just, like, highlight a paragraph. And then I'm like, oh, we cut that out. You know, because we forget what we cut.
Yeah.
Sure.
Or at least I do. Mike tends to remember better than I do.
Wow.
So we create this text document, which is literally everything we've cut. And then we decide, we didn't really need that. Oh, God, we missed that. We got to put that back in. And we create the extended cut based on those snippets that we sort of then reassemble into the extended version. And so, like I said, most extendeds are like 23 minutes, 24 minutes. This is 26 minutes. It's so great. And there's literally, and usually we cut like, you know, half a scene to get it down to time or, you know, a chunk here or there. There are three whole scenes that we cut.
I can think of
one.
Three separate locations that we didn't see in the episode.
Really?
And they're all really great. And I'm excited for people to see it.
About extended cuts too is that they're like canon.
Right.
So
right.
there's been times that we in the writer's room have been like, okay, that thing that matters. Like, that didn't air, but it did air in the extended cut. And so that is canon because we were like, we don't want it to just be, like, random extra jokes that we throw in. And I feel like we've had to, like, dig through cuts like that before.
Can we talk about canon?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Where does that come from? Anyone know?
You sound like such a nerd right now.
Why is the word canon?
Yeah.
Why do we say that?
I mean, I think it's my first interface with it was about the Bible and
the Bible.
A huge, it's a bestseller. You know, at some point, that was a book that was curated by people in the Constantinian Empire. And what was canon and what was not? Mm. Like, what was officially, there are tons of apocryphal books that were written at the same time about the same stuff that people were like, oh, it's got some weird stuff in it. We're going to leave this out.
Oh.
C-A-N-O-N, like what the etymology of that specifically, I don't know.
That's a very good answer already.
Thanks,
you
man.
Freak. You
way more impressive than I could imagine.
Early Reddit. Bible freak.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much.
And then when people say headcanon, does that mean like, is that like fan fiction stuff? Or what does that mean?
I don't know.
I've never heard that.
You just made something up.
Chime in, listeners. They say like, oh, that's headcanon. That means like, maybe that like means you can pretend in your head that's canon.
Oh.
Okay, Mark?
I'm moving on. So so it takes all night for Michael to take the humans through it. I feel like we maybe have been given news here, new canon, which is that once you become aware of the afterlife, your motivation to do good things is corrupted and you can no longer earn points. We haven't stated that concisely before, have we?
We've talked about motivation. I'm not sure we've actually talked about it.
It seems really concisely stated in a way that seems like not a new rule, not a late and changey rule, just like, oh God, forever.
We've talked about the concept of motivation and how it affects.
Sure. There's a whole episode in the first season where Eleanor is trying to raise her points in the afterlife, and it's not working because her motivation is wrong.
Oh, right, sure. right. Hold
and
the door.
So it's sort of a corollary to that.
Right.
Yeah, so, yes.
And like, when Tahani realizes that the reason she didn't get into the good place was because her motivation was corrupt. Is that the same?
Yeah, it's all the same, same theory.
Though there's a tremendous exchange that Darcy, you deliver so perfectly. It's written expertly and it's deliciously delivered, which is Michael
edited
says,
well.
so sorry for eternally dooming you. And you go, and that's our bad guys. Like, it's just so huge, and it's delivered as though you said, like, and we were the ones that forgot to bring lunch. Like, so sorry.
Well, geez, Mark, thank you for saying that.
What a pleasure to work with you.
Oh, Megan, I love you.
That's also one of those moments where there were like probably 10 reads of that were all slightly different, and we were tearing our hair out trying to figure out which is the funniest one because they were all so good.
Thanks, Eric.
Do you remember any of the other ones you did? They were like all, it was like, our bad.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I sort of, I don't know,
Darcy is one of those people you can just always know that, like, when there's a question mark of a moment, you know, she'll just take it and just turn it into something wonderful.
God, thank you so much. Oh my God, I'm going to die right now.
Well, don't. No, we're not done with the podcast.
I think that was like a little Janity moment, like a old school Janity moment almost. Almost.
Totally, like cheerful out of proportion to what's
quite
going
reading
on.
Reading the room. Yeah.
Which is like that you were in an interesting place for who Janet is. Like, Janet is becoming more and more human. Her powers are, you know, gone at the moment. She still has all the knowledge that she had on board when she came. But we're seeing you do all these super fun, really twisty things. One's about to come up in a minute that I'll talk about. But another piece of canon that we're given is, you know, the fans have wondered, I've wondered about timeline what it all means.
Oh, my God.
And Tahani says, like, all these things you described that must have taken 100 years. And he's like, about 300, actually. Like, we finally know.
Yeah.
And we are finally told how things work, as we will hear in this clip.
Right now.
I'm trying to throw... clip.
Well, how is it possible that all these things happened to us, but no time passed on Earth? Did you go back in time to save us?
I didn't have to because of Jeremy Baramy.
Who's Jeremy Baramy?
Okay. Things in the afterlife don't happen while things are happening here. Because while time on Earth moves in a straight line, one thing happens, then the next. Time in the afterlife moves in a Jeremy Baramy.
What?
In the afterlife, time doubles back and loops around and ends up looking something like Jeremy Baramy. This is the timeline in the afterlife. Happens to kind of look like the name Jeremy Baramy in cursive English, so that's what we call it.
Sorry, my brain is melting. How can events happen before the ones that happened before?
Just the way it works. It's Jeremy Baramy. I don't know what to tell you. That's the easiest way to describe it.
Okay, but what the hell is this? The dot over the eye. The hell is that?
Okay. How do I explain this concisely? This is Tuesdays and also July.
And sometimes it's never.
That's true. Occasionally, that moment on the Baramy timeline is the time moment when nothing never occurs. So, you get it.
This broke me. The dot over the eye. That broke me. I'm done.
Full episodes of The Good Place can be found on NBC.com and the NBC app. New episodes air Thursdays, 8:30, 7:30 Central on NBC. Jeremy Baramy.
Mm. Megan. Jeremy Baramy.
Feels so good to throw that into the world.
Who's, why, where to come from.
Well, I have to say, this was one of the most momentous events to occur in the writer's room.
Momentous
eventus. We we were just talking for a while before this episode about, like, how the timeline works.
Sure.
And we wanted to clarify what we already had in our head, which was that the timeline of the afterlife is not moving concurrently with the timeline on Earth.
Of course.
And it is probably moving in a way that is, like, truly incomprehensible for humans.
Sure.
But how to best portray that in a way that is funny and nerdy. And so we sometimes split the writer's room into two smaller groups.
Okay.
And so I was in, like, my small group, and I came back. We, like, gathered, and I came back into the other room, and there just was a card that said Jeremy Baramy on it. And I was like, what in the world is this? And then it was described to us that Josh Siegel, who should get, like, all the credit for saying this extremely weird thing that just, like, popped out of his head, they were discussing the timeline, and he just, like, scribbled this thing and was like, what if the timeline just, like, looks like this word, Jeremy Baramy? Or it started as Jeremy, and we changed it to Jeremy Baramy, so it would be a little sillier. Yeah. But it, like, instantly, it never changed from, like, the months.
That was a question,
before,
sure.
Before I wrote this episode, like, we had thought of this way before that.
You knew that you were helming this episode while these two groups had split and stuff, right?
No, this was, like, so early in the season that I think we were still just, like, you know, generally talking about stuff. And I was so excited I got to write this episode because we knew this was going to be the episode where we talked about Jeremy Baramy. And it just, like, clicked so well into... It, like, is a name of nobody.
Right.
And
I was convinced that I was about to hear a story where it was Josh Siegel's kid had a beloved teddy bear. Named Jeremy
Bear. It was just this, like, perfectly formed thought that just, like, jumped out. And then the actual cursive writing, Joe Mandy wrote it. He's artistic and has good handwriting.
Beautiful.
And then he also ended up writing the script for The Sign, which... I have to find that sign because I wanted to save it for
also,
Josh.
I feel like, am I right that the title on this script was handwritten?
Yes.
Right.
So
that was kind of cool.
Yeah. And it's,
instead of typed.
When we, you know, have the scripts for the actors to read or at table reads or whatever, they're always just typed a normal thing in 2018.
Right.
But we actually, photocopied Joe's handwritten.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Jeremy Baramy to put on the title sheet of this script so that you could see exactly what we were talking about. And I'm so excited for fans of this show to get Jeremy Baramy because I think it will be both, like, hopefully answer some questions, but also just be extremely silly and in keeping with, like, how we are as a sci-fi show, which is, like, comedy show first.
I do think that Jeremy Baramy sort of encapsulates, like, everything I love about this show.
Mm-hmm.
The concept, the word, everything
me
about
too.
It.
Yeah. It really,
because the,
like,
concept
sums up
is
the
very,
whole show.
Very exactly. complicated.
It's the, I mean,
and theoretical.
Dumb and smart at the same time.
This is the smartest, dumbest show on television. This was an interesting episode because we got, initially, the advance was a rough cut. Then we got the finished cut, and one can notice differences. Eric, one of the things that we noticed is in this scene that we're talking about right now, there was a portion where you were using Darcy's Janet in the background, sort of, and there was definitely a cut, like a your matte thing, in the original version that I saw that completely smooths out somehow, even though the camera was moving and in two totally different places.
Yeah.
And the line that Ted draws for the conventional Earth timeline is the opposite of straight. I mean, it goes
curved.
All over. And obviously, the script we just learned of Jeremy Baramy was written by someone else, and then the art department, graphics department, puts that in. But did you change what Ted drew? Because in the show, in the finished version, it's very straight.
Yeah, so that was a little bit of VFX magic.
Need noggle.
This is actually one of those moments. So the beginning of the season, this funny thing happens where basically Need Noggle doesn't have anything to do because we haven't locked any of our cuts, and so he's literally kind of sitting there twiddling his thumbs.
Also, we're on Earth, so
they're not
going to be
not a lot of visual
ladybugs.
Effects on Earth, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's literally sitting there twiddling his thumbs, and we're like,
spoiler. But they're not going to be.
I mean, they're going to be. Tiny.
Yeah, they'll be tiny. You probably won't see them on camera.
I apologize. Keep going.
We whiten the ladybugs to you.
We added a lot of ladybugs and VFX to Earth. So he basically says yes to everything in the beginning, you know, because he's bored and I've got all the time in the world, yeah. You know, and so we're like, could you add this crazy thing? It's like, no problem. And then we get about kind of halfway through the season and he starts to get a little bit overwhelmed. He gets a little bit more nervous. He's in the office like down the hall and we call him up and we're like, David, can you come in? And he comes in and he's like a little bit like a scared animal, you know. He's like, what's going to happen, you know. And this was something we sprung on him very, very late in the game. It was way after we should have. Should have sort of flagged it. We sort of talked about it a little bit, but like we were like, the line is straight enough. And then at the 11th hour, we were like, that line that Ted drew is not straight at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
no shade.
Whole point is that the timeline is supposed to be a straight line. Right. And if the timeline curves down at the end,
he's an actor.
You know, so we ended up David Nigel ended up having to redo all the lines in every shot. And it's literally like 30 shots in that scene of the board. I mean, it's in the background. There's people walking in front of the board and David just probably, you know, pulled an all-nighter.
Something similar happened in an episode or two before this, right? About Palto on a board had changed a time or two.
There was one version of Palto with a lowercase L and one version with an uppercase L. There's a lot of that stuff. And the thing is that David loves creating like magical pandas to zip around or like a three-headed flying bear, that kind of thing. And we're like, can you change these two letters in 50 shots? He's like,
that's so boring. Yeah, he should have some
less interesting.
Yeah, it's less interesting.
Leave it to Chidi to find. You know, he's so rules based or whatever, and wants to know how to do it right. That of course he zeroes in immediately on the dot in the eye, the dot above the eye, in Jeremy Barame, and is this is something that I love because out of control Chidi. This is the most we've ever seen Will poke through.
That's him going, really funny.
He goes, the hell is this? That's Will.
Yes.
That's Will, and I love it.
It's a hard scene for everybody because it's like Michael and Janet have a hard thing to play, which is they've killed their friends.
Right.
And then the humans all are being told, like,
you're dead.
You're dead. You're going to hell.
No matter what you do.
Yeah. No matter what you do. And also, like, here's Thursday in July.
Right. There's so many things.
Yeah, it's great. Like, I think that Will really encapsulated the, like my head is going to fall
before
off.
I murder you
with a smile.
We also saw Janet, like OG, original Janet. They're going like, it's also sometimes never. That's very old guard. Oh, very sweet.
Can I just interrupt for 1 second there? We've been talking about this episode for 20-odd minutes now, and we are still almost entirely talking about the first act of the episode. And it's incredible because this was our experience watching the episode. We would watch the episode down and the first act would end and we'd be like, that's a great show. And they'd be like, wait a second. Much happens in that first act. It's insane.
Right. It's in the first 4 minutes. It's crazy.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Get real.
No, for real.
Okay. One thing is when I watched, I'm just going to bump ahead, but then let's bump back. You mentioned seeing Will poke through.
Yeah.
I feel like as this episode went on and he has his meltdown, it is definitely the most real Will. Mm-hmm. That is Will.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Will has so much Chidi in him, but he also has so much meltdown Chidi in him.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the closest I've ever seen.
Like, I mean, because we all know he's just the funniest, weirdest. And Chidi's so straight-laced. So to get to see Chidi, like, lose it is so fun.
Oh, Chidi in this episode is so good.
I know. And we're doing a really good job of not, you know, talking about how hot he looks.
Well, I'll get there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I have a lot prepared on that subject.
I'm going to blow past these because there's simply too much to talk about. Janet pointing to nowhere on the board and saying, that's my birthday is delightful.
Also that Janet is not looking behind her.
She's not looking.
She's just pointing, which she would know where it was. It's just such a funny thing to have had you just, like, slam your finger behind you.
The bar that Eleanor goes to drink at is Drinking Nemo, which is sort of great. Mm-hmm. We also have another visit by a Swanson Safe Company which is kind of cool.
Wait, sorry, we have to pause on this for a second. So the bar she goes to drink is Drinking Nemo.
Yeah.
The grocery store where Chidi shops at is BNG, which stands for Bagging Nemo Grocery.
And then the bank.
And the bank is FNB, which is Financing Nemo Bank.
That's all in the script?
It's all within the script or just stuff we came up with?
It's headcanon.
Headcanon.
I think it is in the script. I think I think it says like FNB Finding Nemo.
The joke being that the entire country, entire continent of Australia is so proud of the movie Finding Nemo being set in Australia that everything in Australia is named after Finding Nemo.
And that nothing had a name before like 2004 or whatever it came out.
Or it was renamed. Everything was renamed.
Yeah. Headcanon.
So ridiculous. Chidi loses his mind and he, someone tries to sell him drugs and says, do you want to talk to God? And he, spouts this quote from Nietzsche, from, also Sprach Zarathustra, that God is dead. And it just, it emanates from him so effortlessly. Yeah. Like it just comes this torrent of like terrible damning words from 1882. and then he gets hit with sprinklers. And this is one of the first places in season three of this podcast I was saying to the producers that it's kind of a drag because I would love at this moment to be able to talk about the internet's reaction to William Jackson Harper removing his upper clothing.
It's well, me and the director, Trent.
Hi, Trent. He's sitting in the corner.
That's not true. Yeah. He's tied up.
We haven't let Trent talk, but he's here. No, the first time Will took off his shirt, I feel like we casually told Will early on.
You did.
I was with the season. Yeah, I was with him.
I think like maybe if I was getting excited and being like, oh, I just started writing my script and I'm so excited because you have to like eat a bunch of chili
with your shirt off or whatever.
Because I'm very tactful with all the actors. And I think he was like, oh my God, gotta get it tight. For this shot.
I mean, the thing about Will is he's got it tight.
He's in great shape.
He loves to
work out a lot. Yeah. He's in great shape on a resting basis.
It's so funny. The second he took his shirt off, I was like, that is the most ripped philosophy professor that has ever existed in the entire world.
Do you guys remember in season one, there's an offhand comment by Eleanor where she calls Chidi surprisingly jacked.
Yeah. Surprisingly jacked, yeah.
And I always thought it was like, oh, well, we need to see his shirt off. And it was funny that 2 seasons later that came true.
Just casually jacked.
Yes.
And I'm saying this not objectifying.
Well, sort of.
It's a friend. It's a professional objectifying.
Yes. I suppose, but it's also, as a friend, it's like, as somebody, I'm able to put myself in his shoes and go like, oh, I would have done the same thing. I don't know that I would have gotten there.
Like,
to that level of, I texted with Will yesterday and I said, hey man, I've just watched this episode. You're cut.
Yeah. You're cut.
And he wrote like, phew, I was worried about it. And I was like, no. Your chest looks pretend.
Right.
And your upper arms are boulderous.
Yeah.
Like he looks.
And also like, funny and nice. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
The second that like Trent and I saw him with the shirt off, we were like, oh, he's gonna be like a Marvel star.
Yeah, totally.
I think he will.
Yeah.
That like it's like
he and Manny together.
Yeah. Like everyone on our show
is
just I'm looking at you, Darcy.
No, you're not. Mm. I am
Spider-Man.
sometimes he and his significant other work out with me and my significant other, and they are in such better shape than us, and it really bums us out.
But then this feels like a whole nother podcast. We should just focus on this.
We double date to the gym, and then we talk them into going out to brunch with us. So it's like
amazing.
A little of this, a little of that. So we work out, and then we eat biscuits for real.
Those don't match at all.
But it's great.
That's really funny. Yeah. In a very sweet move. Even knowing that their fate is largely sealed, Michael and Janet try to document this experience, try to improve the afterlife, try to better the system, and they write this crazy manifesto. Michael's a terrible typist. Janet can type without looking.
He's so forking
funny.
Oh my gosh. Can I tell you that H thing?
Yes.
Like his like, this kid is, there's Eric. Like that's so Ted
so
and funny.
He's so forking funny.
The way he says doesn't have an H without using any consonants. Yeah. It's so great.
Doesn't have an H.
This keeper doesn't have an H.
Oh my
that's
God.
One of my favorite parts of the episode.
Yeah.
It's
because like he's not like, he's an ageless creature that's not a human.
Right.
Like the fact that he's acting like the type of person who's never seen a computer before is so funny.
It's so good. It's really funny. He cracks me up.
He is good at it. Eleanor goes to a bar, and you guys do a very parenthetical, great assessment of how terrible America is by saying, like, no, yes, everybody looks out only for themselves. It's great. It's terrible. It's the best. We killed all the bees. And if you need surgery, you just beg for money on the internet. Like,
I feel like we kind of nailed it.
Oh, it's really there. Were there others considered other terrible attributes of America?
I honestly feel like that sort of is
the
ideal.
Yeah, I'm also, I feel like this keeps happening where, like, I write scripts and, like, my own personal obsessions find their way in. But I feel like I'm really obsessed with how all the bees died, even though I think they came back a little bit.
Yay.
But it's like, that just the most apocalyptic thing is that just, like, all these bugs fell out of the sky and then we all just moved on with
our lives.
It's just a thing that hasn't, not particularly pertains to America, but I feel like sums up the country.
Right.
It's probably our fault.
Definitely we did something that—
The bees?
Effed up the bees.
Oh.
It's our fault?
Don't trust the bees.
What do you know?
Support for this program is not brought to you by Roundup.
That would be amazing if it was brought to you by Roundup. I was like, wait, who's making this podcast?
Not Monsanto.
Yeah.
Support for this program is provided by
Eating Nemo Restaurant, Australia's number one chain of restaurants aimed at getting American tourists to eat there. Eating Nemo, when you want to remind children that their food was once alive and cute.
So at this bar, Eleanor finds a wallet. She tries with everything she has to take the cash. That seems to be standard operating procedure for a lot of folks. She can't do it. And she tries to take it back. Who does she take it back to?
Well, she takes it back to a man named Fred Booth, which you as the viewer might be thinking, well, that's just a normal name.
Right.
This is a story that undoubtedly will make no one happy except for me.
I will be happy too.
This was a very weird room bit that at the very—
An inside joke inside the writer's room.
Inside joke in the writer's room that— No one in the writer's room thought was funny except for me.
So this would that be called a room bit or is that just an AMRAM?
Yeah, it's really
bit.
Just an AMRAM.
Okay.
But like the first week of the writer's room of season three, I, apropos of nothing, said that I thought a funny character name would be Fred Tooth.
Tooth with a T.
Yeah, which it would be.
That's a great name.
I think everyone here would agree.
Do you agree?
And then the next day, I came in and said, apropos of nothing, I thought of good casting for Fred Tooth, Justin Theroux. And Mike Schur responded with, everything you just said is so
motherforking
crazy. Which then we wrote down, Joe Mandy like wrote it on a note card and it was taped up on my office door all year. And as
what
much
was
as
exactly,
I could,
the, Fred
the
Tooth.
Quote that said, I thought of good casting for Fred Tooth, Justin Theroux, and then Mike's response to me. And I think that sums up my relationship with Mike Schur. But also, I then kept all year pitching that Fred Tooth was in stuff, but there's no character to Fred Tooth. He's a character played by Justin Theroux, whose name is Fred Tooth.
Mm-hmm.
And
I have a question.
Yeah.
Why couldn't Fred Booth's name be Fred Tooth?
You wonder that, wouldn't you? In the script, his name was Fred Tooth.
I thought
because
so.
That's the character.
Who changed it? Eric?
Mike changed it. Mike changed it because Fred Tooth is crazy, but like Wyoming Knots is not crazy.
Well, let's talk about that because these are also things that will never—
Oh, wait. The other thing, though, is you do see Fred Booth's name on his driver's license.
That's true, but that could still be Fred Tooth.
I know.
Really?
I guess it's harder to justify when you have to see it written. But then—
I'm justifying it.
In Chidi's, that we like had all the professors who are— in the school, and they say, like, Pam Watermelon and stuff.
Right.
So
let's go over.
Am mad again.
You're talking about the board from an episode or two ago where he goes to look for Simone, and they have on the board are ridiculous names.
Yeah.
That was something that fans of the show wrote to me about on Twitter. I did not spend time on it. You
Don't.
Did so much more work than necessary for things that will never, ever be in evidence, which is that the two-linest character in this episode of the show you gave a name to, and they're all silly Australia puns, twists, right?
I wouldn't really call them puns or twists. They're really they're Australian nothings.
Australian
but we did,
nothings.
I mean, we have a lot of fun. This dates Almost back, fun. As I think we've talked about on this podcast, back to, like, towards the end of Parks and Rec, the names got so unintelligibly crazy that they're just, like, slamming a keyboard, basically.
With something
it's that kind of syllable work. But Yeah, everyone in, all the Australians in this episode, which I'm sure just like furthers how much we have delved into Australian culture, are, I guess they're spoonerisms, right? Where the first letter of the first name and last name.
Oh, yeah.
Let me describe what we're talking about. Okay. For instance, the bartender that's talking to Eleanor, that she does have a legitimate conversation with about rules and about, you know, what we owe to each other, and that society would collapse if we all just looked out for ourselves. His name would never be spoken in the show. There's a famous former Australian tennis pro named Rod Laver, Adidas Mixus Shoe in his name. The name of the bartender, for no reason, is Lod Raver. What is your problem?
You know, people just expect a high level of detail from this show. And this is how you know they're Australian, but also not real. That's the best way to give you those hints. I like that I'm looking at a list of
Please, please pick your favorites.
Nicole
favorites.
Mankid is like, just really, we must have spent hours on that one.
So not Nicole Kidman.
Right.
But Nicole Mankid.
She's real and Australian, but this one's Australian, but not real. So it's Nicole Mankid.
This one I'm looking at, let's see. Jell Mibson is pretty funny.
I guess it would be Gel, though, right?
Mel
Gibson.
Jell. They both work, right?
That's the bank manager that refuses to allow Tahani to give her money to Jason, right?
Right,
yeah.
Darcy, what's the name of the cab driver?
The cab driver is Mark Supiol.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
Well, that's
Come on, man.
Just fun.
You Mark know, Supiol.
Everyone can have fun with that one. Mark Supiol.
Of course, we all know Miley Canogue. Not to mention Eith Kerbin.
We've like gone so far into like breaking down what makes a joke that we're just writing children's.
Yeah.
There's something you guys have to know about this, which is that we were on the mix stage mere days ago, not long before the episode set to air, and we're listening to the sound and making tweaks and doing our thing. And at some certain point, the mixer pauses on one of the scenes where there's credit. There's like a credit at the very end of the show, and it has all the names and the actors and that kind of thing. And Mike stands up and goes, "What is happening? What is going on?" Somewhere along the chain of command, passing all these things along, all the last names had gotten taken out.
Oh,
of the character names, because it's standard practice when you have a character that has one or two lines, you give them one name. It's Mark, you know, it's not Mark Supiol.
But that's not
so
funny.
We're paused on this image, and it's Mark. Like Laud, played by, you know, Kat, played by Gavon, played by.
That's so funny.
And Mike is like, I've never seen him got so worked up about something. He wasn't actually that worked up, but it was just really sort of happenstance that we just caught this. We just assumed that these brilliant joke names would make their way through and no one would question them. But apparently someone was like, "What are all these weird names?" I'm just going to put the first name down.
I kind of remember in the read-through, because Mike reads the stage direction.
Right.
I remember when he got to like the seventh Australian name in front of like all of, you know, NBC and Universal and everything. His the tone of his voice got a little more like, "Oh boy, we got another one." Like starting off strong with like Miley Canogue.
Sure.
And then by the end of it, it's like Mark.
By Wyoming Knots.
Yeah.
You're like, okay.
We get
there is one name that doesn't get a last name in the credits. Damon. Mm. Damon is the name of the guy who asked Chidi if he wants to talk to God.
Oh, interesting.
This is a good Easter egg. Okay.
This is a good
Easter
egg.
Oh, I got it. I got it.
Yeah,
you got
I figured it out.
What do you think it is?
So if you watched the show Leftovers, which is a great show that we all highly recommend.
Yes.
There is... have you not watched it? Mm. Okay. Well, I recommend it to you then.
Fine.
There is... they say it at least once.
Yeah.
There is a reference to a man in a red bandana.
Right.
This is so specific and such a specific Leftovers reference that this character doesn't even appear in the Leftovers.
Yeah, this is a reference that no one will ever get.
He's talked about, except for possibly Damon Lindelof, who created the show. But as has been discussed by Mike and some of us like online and stuff, a lot of the writers are like really into the Leftovers, but also are influenced in some of the same themes. And like our show has a few different Easter eggs
about
the Leftovers, like Eleanor's birthday is October 14th, which is the day of the great departure in the Leftovers, etc. And so we wanted to get this very specific And do you want to talk to God is a line that is set in Leftovers.
And I'll say even further, that line was put into the finale of season two and was cut out. Yeah. So you guys really wanted to get it in
so
there.
This it was like, asked at the airport, right? The university.
Yeah, right.
So Eleanor arrives at the university in Australia and someone comes up to her and says, you want to talk to God? And Mike, we were like trying to figure out a way to keep it in, but it just took too much time. And so we had to
and
cut it out.
And this was, we tied this into the story, I think, of Chidi pretty well, where he says this Nietzsche line and the guy's just, I was just trying to tell you drugs. Stop making it weird.
Yeah. He was just trying to tell him drugs.
Oh, come on, man.
Sorry. Oh, my God. Ouch. Darcy.
Oh, sorry. Stop embarrassing me in front
such
of
a little but nasty
can we all bench. Pause for 1 second and acknowledge that this reference to Damon Lindelof, which no one will ever get except people listening to this podcast, was shot not once, but twice on this show.
Right,
they had to cast someone, get him to set, give him a costume.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is an amazing
that's how much we care.
And we love Damon.
Fine. I'll watch
you
got it.
I was excited that not only do I get Jeremy Baramy in my episode, but I also get the reference to The Leftovers that only like three people are going to get. And I am overjoyed that that's in my episode.
Speaking of specificity, I love that when Chidi loses it and goes to a supermarket that has a Nemo-based name and buys all sorts of chili, he's also buying a lot of almond milk, which seems like a deep cut to a lot of stuff. He gives away his car and his credit card.
With a big old smile on his face.
Yeah. And he buys a shirt that says, who, what, where, when, wine.
Yeah.
That was in the script. That was something that you asked for to have designed.
So that was very, again, very important to me. Like 7 years ago, as a joke for myself, this is what the theme of this podcast is I do a lot of jokes that are only for like maybe two people, but really just for me.
Right.
I opened like a cafe press store online that sold aprons that said who, what, when, where, wine, and looked almost exactly like the shirts we had designed because I think like fun wine, like ant culture is very funny. Like a nice
it is very anti,
woman,
isn't it? Yeah.
Like wearing a cute wine gemstone shirt, can't get enough of it.
That's great.
I'm gonna be there so soon.
Yeah.
and it just I feel like we just were like Chidi needs to look really silly and
weirdly hot
and strangely and hot,
weirdly
at the
hot. And the shirts are like they're like women's tight, you know, fitted shirts.
Yeah, you get those.
So it's only
big biceps
accentuating.
Okay,
boulders.
Yeah, it's don't cut that. And yeah, so who, what, when, where, wine. Again, it's like sometimes you are on set and you're just like, how did all my dreams come true? And you look at someone on an NBC sitcom who was forced to wear a shirt about wine that you thought of years ago, and you're just like, I made it.
It's funny that you're on a show with Ted Danson and Kristen Bell, and the thing that made your dreams come true
don't
is
care
the
for
who
them.
Wear
yeah.
a wine shirt.
Did yet another of your dream come true?
It's also who, what, when, where, ... wine.
Oh, there's an
which
ellipsis.
Is very important.
Jason and Tahani go about philanthropy. They're giving away stacks of money. Very sweetly, Jason tucks a stack of bills into a stroller at one point.
Yeah,
I love
for
that.
A little kid. We then come across a busking musician, a violinist playing a tiny chin guitar, playing Vivaldi's Spring. That was Megan Amram.
Which I wanted to say that this was not my idea to put myself in my own episode, which upon it all coming together, I realize seems very narcissistic. But we had written in this busker, and during one of the like meetings that we're all the people who design stuff are in to like plan for the episode, we hadn't cast the violin player. And then Kirsten, who is a wonderful person and friend who designs the costumes on the show.
Kirsten Mann,
who I've known for many years, was like, oh, Megan plays violin.
Perfect.
Just do her. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I should probably just like be on set for my episode.
You were saying this as you were opening your violin case and stringing the bow?
I always have two violins, one on each shoulder, just in case. Like right now I have one. Bring! You can edit in a violin.
Bring! But I love the violin. Bring!
That's what his violin
yeah,
like.
Bring. It's, bring! I do play violin.
Excuse me, it my is violin's like, ringing.
You can probably hear me play like four notes in this episode, which I was like 20 years of playing violin truly paid off in that I got to play it on a TV show, which is very cool. But
side plug, watch Megan's web series if you want to see her really play violin.
Watch Megan's web series if you want to see Darcy Carden.
That's also true.
I was trying to avoid that very sticky subject. Sorry. My condolences.
Sorry. Thank you.
Thank you. That's not what we're here for.
I mean,
but
that's a different podcast altogether.
Yeah, different podcast. We'll do that later. Yeah.
There's one little thing I have to add, which is that in this episode, Jason puts down money and you kind of like stop playing the violin and sort of like look down just to look at the money. And then in every take, right after that moment, you swivel around to look at him with this look on your face of like, what? And it's like the biggest, most insane look.
Oh,
and Mike and I got a lot of laughter.
Well, I'm very subtle and so a great actor, so I don't know why that would
be. It's okay. Every time you're like, what?
Here's the thing I will say. I'm not a very good violin player already, and it's very intimidating to have to play violin and quote unquote act in front of an entire crew of people.
Sure.
So it was out of my comfort zone.
I get you.
I didn't have the subtlety that a more talented violin player would have mustered.
But I will say, that is the sound is you playing and it sounds great.
Thank you.
We were like, oh, do we have to replace that with? And it was like, no, that is Vivaldi's.
I'm very excited. I was not dubbed.
Good job.
Congratulations.
But I have to see that face. I'm going to have to see that.
I'll show
it to
you. We can go back to the interview.
You mentioned a funny bit before we began recording, which is that Eleanor returns the wallet. She has this very meaningful moment. It's not about the money to the guy. He had an encouraging drawing drawn by his daughter in his wallet. He just started a new job and was nervous. There was a bit that got cut. Tell me about that.
I rarely am like sad when jokes get cut because I understand why we had to do it. But I was very sad this got cut. So the way it ends right now, this man, Fred Tooth, real name.
Headcanon.
Fred Booth.
Fred Tooth. Oh, God. What is it?
Fred Booth.
Fred Booth shows this drawing that a little girl has made and Eleanor is crying and it inspires her to go do good. And then in a part that was shot but was cut, a like 16-year-old girl walks down the stairs and Fred Booth is like, oh, here's my daughter now. Meet Eleanor. And Eleanor's like, I thought from the drawing you were going to be a much younger girl. And the girl's like, oh, no, I'm just very bad at drawing. And Eleanor just goes, oh, cool. Which is like, I really was happy that we shot it. It was really funny, and I'm very sad.
It's more meaningful, obviously, the way that it's presented in the final cut, but that's such a funny joke.
It's so hard not to have, like, a very meaningful moment and then immediately undercut it entirely with something insane.
So you wait. You wait a little bit, because later she does take a swipe at her and refers to her as a very untalented.
Yes, which made more sense when she was, like, a old teenager, but...
But it's meaner if it's a little
kid.
Now
it's funny that she's just like making fun of a 5-year-old.
Can I pitch something for a possible season 4?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Does it involve Fred Tooth?
Yeah. Can Fred Booth?
Does it involve Sean?
No. Well, maybe. Could Fred Booth meet somebody named Fred Tooth and then they're kind of like, whoa, we look alike. And then can they also meet a third guy named Fred Tooth and they realize that they're triplets, long lost triplets? No, I'm not done. They look exactly alike. Their names are all Fred, Booth, Tooth, and Tooth. And then they like do blood tests and realize that they're actually separated triplets. And then they move in together and live the rest of their lives together. And then they all get into the good place and ... That's
so cool. Except you're forgetting.
That's the plot of the fourth season.
But you are forgetting one crucial element, which is that Fred Tooth is played by Justin Theroux. That's the only thing we know about
him.
Wait,
then how can they be identical triplets?
They can be triplets.
Look,
they
if just Christian can't be Bale identical. Can be Dick Cheney.
Yeah. No, but I like that they all were adopted into families that all named them Fred, but then slightly different last names.
Well, they didn't name their own last name. They were just lucky enough to have three rhyming last names.
Tooth, Tooth, and Booth. So there's a great reveal. Chidi still lost his mind. He's singing, you put the peeps in the chili pot and you have the M&M's.
Yeah.
And then we reveal that he's in a lecture hall in the middle of a class just before exams. Like, he's completely lost his mind. He says at one point, he tries to share his chili and he says, come on, dip your paws in my chili. Mm. I had to replay that several times because it 100% sounds like he says balls.
It does.
It 100% sounds like he says, dip your balls in my chili.
The only reason I knew he said paws is because the second line is mittens or something
like
that?
Yeah. Mitts, yeah. Slip your mitts.
Wait, dip your balls in my belly.
Oh my God, it sounds like he said
so
balls. That,
awesome.
That came up on the mix stage. Like a couple people were like, does it sound like balls? And like, it was like kind of late that night. And we were all like, no, it's fine. It's not like
it's
balls.
Great.
It 100% sounds like he said, like, come on, dip your balls in my chili.
It's so uncheaty to ask someone to dip their balls in his chili.
It's so funny to like... Like, all he needed was one tip in the...
He was precarious, right?
That Chidi always has wanted to tell people the different balls in chili, but he's been so uptight that
Now he can finally
That's
say
a
it.
Great, rich character moment.
It's got some booze, Will in it again. It's like...
Oh, yeah.
I'm talking booth, tooth, and tooth. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, cut it.
We finally... We're at such a low point that Chidi calls a student nerd.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
pretty great. And then he takes him through. He's like, all right, you want the truth? Here's the truth. You're going to hate it.
Yeah.
And he takes him through virtue ethics and consequentialism and deontology. He tells him that all of it's hot, stinky cat dookie.
Was that in the script?
Yeah, that was in the script. The thing that's so great about Chidi's fit that he throws is that, like, he has the most rigid worldview of any of them. So I think he is the one whose life in that moment is, like, most truly turned upside down.
Right.
So, like, Eleanor says something along the lines of, like, I'll see you guys in hell.
Yep.
She's
you know what?
Up.
I've always say that, but this time it's true. I will see you in hell.
Right.
So for her, she's just like, I was
I knew
right.
It.
Everything sucks. Chidi is, you know... He thinks at least the world is, like, governed by invisible ethics
right.
or that there is a right answer. And so, like, it was so fun to see him go completely insane.
It would make sense that he would lose it.
Yeah. Nothing he thought was true.
I have a question for you, Megan. So when he gives his speech about the three sort of dominant, you know, ideas about philosophy, there's the Aristotle virtue ethics.
Yes.
There's utilitarianism and there's deontology. We then sort of show images of these storylines that we've seen throughout the episode. And,
right.
and the intention is to sort of realize that, oh, these three stories are actually examples of these three philosophies. At what point in the writing process was that grafted on after the point, or was that sort of like part of the DNA of the episode?
That was all part of the DNA. We wanted it to be, we specifically wrote all these stories for them to go off on their own to sort of represent different ways to deal with a world that seemed chaotic or, like, you know, that you could interpret as nihilistic. And then once we, you know, got that ending speech down, tried to, like, really finesse the moments that we would show in the B-roll that we
to sort of draw the parallels
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
perfectly.
We tried to be a little smart so that when he is eating chili
Very
with
smart.
His hands, it
yeah
seems
that part
smarter.
Really kind of killed me. Killed me dead.
Yeah,
yeah. I really liked the way that all looked together, and I guess it's like we read the script, so I should know it was going to look like that. But
no,
you don't.
You can't imagine things
because you're only looking at things with your own eyeballs out into the world
your
and
gooey,
you don't
juicy
know
eyeballs.
That.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was cool to see that all put together.
But another thing that this is not a smart thing, but another thing that we shot and probably never made one of the cuts was Eleanor comes to Chidi's classroom to, like, rescue him from this chilly situation, his, like, nihilistic fit.
Right.
And she's like, come with me. And Chidi just, like, looks at her and then goes and, like, takes a handful of chili with his hands and puts it in his pocket.
Yes.
So,
R.I.P. I
mean,
it is true that was shot.
Yeah. No time. You can't spend your
it
time.
It was a hard joke to convey because,
know,
you
know,
you had to show that there was, like, a big thing of chili and then see it in his pocket.
Yeah.
And
so. As I've discussed on this show before, the last episode I did with Jamila where a lot of people tweeted at me that they were, like, going to barf from it, which I thought was great.
Why?
They seemed to like it because we were talking about clam chowder.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
And also, like, clam chowder is, like, a dessert.
Right. Savory,
Chili which, pockets savory. Doesn't make me want to barf.
But chili and peeps was, like, I would say there's also, like, in the writer's room, I'm known for being obsessed with wrong food, quote unquote, which a lot of people are. It's always very fun.
Okay.
But it seemed like a good weigh-in for me. But there was, I also tasted the chili and peeps, which was all and M&Ms.
Why?
You dipped your
peeps in there? Here's the thing.
Did you dip your balls?
I had heard from someone once that it's like good protocol if you're a director or a writer or something to show solidarity with an actor, to be like, I also will eat the gross thing. And Will was getting very grossed out by it, which he's a trooper.
He has a super sensitive stomach.
But he also like had to go in a sprinkler, just keep walking through a sprinkler, it was cold, and then it was eating all this gross chili. He really was a trooper. But I was like, our props mistress, Gay, was like, oh, it tastes kind of good. It's like chili, but, you know, with a sweet barbecue sauce or something, which is what it tasted like at the beginning.
Yeah.
But the more takes we took, the more the M&Ms and peeps melted in it.
Right.
And by the end of it, I took a taste of it at the very end, and it was nasty. It was beef flavored corn syrup.
Barf.
And it was like, I know it doesn't sound that gross.
No, it does.
I know it doesn't sound that gross.
You've never had a bigger smile on your face than you do right this moment.
But it was just like, because I couldn't tell which flavors weren't going well with each other.
Right. Maybe, yeah.
I was like, yeah, barbecue sauce has sugar in it. It should all make sense. But it was not great.
We should
put out a cookbook. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's almost a world in which you could see that they would have swapped out the actual sugary chili and put in just some normal chili for him to eat.
Yeah.
But then it wouldn't have been authentic. And our show's good.
Are you concerned at all, canon-wise, that the internet will come for you? I'm not certain there are peeps down under.
We discussed this. Okay. We literally had a very long discussion about this because peeps are not usually sold in Australia, but there are import stores where they're sold, and we decided that
who cares?
Bagging Nemo Grocery
had an import section in the way that you might go to a grocery store in America, and there'll be international foods.
Ribena. They come back together, and we find out that Jason and Tahani got married, which Janet freaks out about. Like, that's a really fun and delicious moment of pain.
She's trying so hard not to.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
Right. Yeah. Right. We all know that feeling, right?
I love Janet. Oh my God. Janet, your playing of her just gritting her teeth and being pretending things are good and normal is so great.
But this is the squeakiest we've seen it. Like, this is the most ice pick.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, to your ribs.
Yeah.
And then it's immediately undone because Tahani says it's just platonic, and you and Ted turn to each other and they're like, got it. Moving on.
Yeah, right. We get this. Yeah, I mean, because in the last season, when she saw Tahani and Jason together, she didn't know that there was the love, right? That she'd been rebooted and their marriage was a thing in the past and she didn't even know about it. So these new sort of jealousy feelings are something that she hasn't ever experienced before.
Also, something that we, have made a conscious point about is she likes Tahani. Tahani is her friend. She respects her. She doesn't want to meddle in her life. She doesn't want to meddle in Jason. This comes up with Larry Hemsworth a little bit, but it's like, it's not just a love triangle.
Right.
It's a little more complicated where it's her love and her friend, and neither of them have a relationship with her right now. And so it's a lot for her to digest, and also you have to stand back and watch.
Yeah. And on top of it, her baseline is to help them.
Right.
That's her most important thing, more than anything, is that
that's
she has to help.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
So it gets really confusing and she's swirling up in there.
There's an underlying theme throughout this of who cares, kind of the nihilism of nothing matters. And right out of the gate in this episode, the humans are told that nothing they can do moving forward will have any impact on where they're headed. They're definitely headed to hell. And they're resigned to their fate at this point. They take the high road, though, sort of in the same way that Janet and Michael have. And they're like, you know what? There are people that we care about, though, whose lives we can make better. So why not try? That's a beautiful sentiment.
Yeah, it really is.
Thank you. No, I mean, it's how a lot of us feel, and I think probably resonates with a lot of people who watch, which is if you don't have something like religion or a strict code of ethics like Chidi for you to latch onto every day, things can feel very chaotic and disorganized. So if your options are to, dive into nihilistic depression or to just try your best, that's kind of what the show entirely is about, is none of us knows what the answer is, so just try your best.
Right.
And it is a story where, like, the characters all set out on roads of altruism in their own ways, which is a fun thing. It's especially fun to watch Eleanor, like, despite her instincts, realize that she has learned over the past year that she's been with her friends that you can't just steal money. And it's really lovely, I think, that Eleanor is the one who sets them off on this journey.
It's interesting, isn't it? And Team Cockroach, the Brainy Bunch, is now the Soul Squad.
Yeah.
Yes. A lot of good names. I keep calling them Team Cockroach and forgetting.
I do too, that it's changed.
It's a different, version of that. Yeah. But it's also very nice to see Michael and Janet, who have this story and one that was longer when we shot it, of like, they also are screwed. Like, they can't go home.
Right.
And they will die, you know, in their own way by the end of it. And what do they do with their now, like, weirdly unlimited time on Earth? And they decide the same thing, which is like, let's just have fun and, like, try to help people.
Yeah. And I think when Eleanor includes Michael and Janet in that, that's, like, a really big moment.
Totally.
The six of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. The four of us.
We never really
the six of us.
Yeah. We never really get included like that.
It's kind of sweet.
You could make a TV show called The Soul Squad. And it would be entertaining, you know, just like a group of people who sort of know the system of the afterlife and sort of go around and try to help people. Like, that could be a TV show.
Yeah.
What's so amazing about The Good Place is, like, this is like the fourth or fifth version of a TV show that exists in this one TV show. Like, the show has several premises that could have lasted several seasons, and they just kind of pick them up and discard them, and they're so good, but they're just like, nope. We're just going to keep moving.
Yeah, like Fred
I was going to say, before these guys mention Booth, Tooth, and your
Boom
on Man.
Tooth and Doom.
Yeah.
Coming to NBC Thursdays from 10 to 4 in the morning.
Oh, it's a miniseries. Wow.
6 hour episode.
No, each episode is 6 hours.
No.
That's also my favorite thing about the show, Eric, what you just said.
Yeah, it keeps metastasizing, and that sounds like a bad thing, but
often,
it's a great
thing. That's often framed in the negative.
Yeah, we're taking it back.
We're taking it back.
Because you know what? You got to try.
In the final moment of this episode, we're thrust back into reality because these four humans have existences in this iteration on Earth, and Larry Hemsworth comes back because he's engaged to Tahani,
so
and they're
going
to leave for London. It's so terrible.
It's so funny that she forgot
that
she
so much
like,
happened
her world
in the last
totally he got upside down.
She just accidentally got married.
It's so funny.
But it, like, totally makes sense.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, you find out, like, everything about your life is over. And you just, like, aren't worrying about little things like who your boyfriend is.
And it's not like she fell in love with Jason or who knows. But, I mean, it's not like she's cheating on him.
It was a platonic money-based marriage. But wait, you're Darcy.
Oh, right,
you're not
right,
Janet.
Right,
it's okay.
Right.
But the Larry is so funny in that one scene. You as a viewer, I think, forget about him for the episode.
You forget about all reality.
Yeah. You're like in it with them, and then just this poor hapless.
Chloe. Yeah.
He's
ready
great,
to go off and
Ben.
Start
yeah.
our
yeah.
lives
yeah.
together.
He's so talented.
He's so cute.
Yeah. Funny and handsome. What
a
combo.
I love that we got Larry into this season.
I know. Yeah. Me too.
Eric Kissack, what's good?
I was hoping you wouldn't start with me. I came really prepared last time, and this time I'm just going to pull from the top of my head. I really like the show Better Call Saul.
Cool. Me too.
Because it's like, everyone who didn't watch Better Call Saul because they're like, oh, it's a prequel to Breaking Bad, why would I do that, needs to realize that it's a completely different show. It's got its own merits. It, in many ways, is better than Breaking Bad because Breaking Bad was sort of like unrelentingly dark. I mean, it was amazing. It's one of my favorite shows. But Better Call Saul, it has a wider range of emotions to pull from. It's really funny. And it has amazing, amazing guest stars like Mark Evan Jackson, who was on an episode this season and who was fantastic.
You're very kind. Thank you.
Snaps.
Megan Amram, what's good?
I'm going to give two. One is a charity that I really like called, it's through a charity called Dig Deep, and it's called the Navajo Water Project. And it is a charity to bring running water to Navajo land. And I've learned a lot from them, and it is really great. And then the other thing that's not a charity, but if you really like crossword puzzles and are sick of normal crossword puzzles, I've gotten really obsessed with this new type of puzzle called the Meta Crossword Puzzle. And if you go to xwordcontest.com, This guy, Matt Gaffney, runs a crossword puzzle that's really hard every week, and I'm really obsessed with it. And most people will hear nothing for what I just said, but if you're like a puzzle person and you heard that, go do it. It's great.
That's cool.
Darcy Carden, what's good?
My grandma Lila is good, but not like Grandma Lila. I mean, like, she's not like a grandma. She's like really cool. And
does she have children that have children?
Yeah.
Then she's a grandma.
She's a grandma, but like, you know, when I just said grandma and you guys all went, oh, she's not really like that.
Okay.
She writes me handwritten letters, and they're really funny, and I just got one in the mail, so I just was thinking, I love it when she writes me letters.
Read it to us now.
Oh my God,
I don't
have it in front of me.
I don't believe that you have a grandma.
I mean, she loves this show, and she's really funny and cool, and, you know, she has like 7 children, and it's hard to explain how cool she is. She's like a real hero of my cousins and I. But I really enjoy her handwritten letters, and there's always something like really sassy or funny in there that I have to like read out loud to my husband. Grandma Lila, big, what are we saying?
Shout out.
What's good? What's good, Grandma Lila? What's good, Grandma Lila? What's good, Grandma Lila?
Thank you guys for being with us. This has been The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. Thank you for listening. Now, why not try? Go do something good.
That was great.
Willis cut. I texted him. Hello. Okay.
And those are all my notes. Okay,
I know. It is hard in today's climate to speak about his bod, but man, he looks smoking hot.
It's interesting. You know, I legitimately, while texting with him, that this subject came up, and I said, you're going to get Manny-level attention about your physical appearance. A lot of people talk about Manny's physical appearance, and it's one of the first times in recent memory, if not ever, that it's been like, oh, I'm noticing this because it happens at every panel, that we're talking about a man's appearance. This happens to women all the time, right? It's gross and weird.
Yeah, it does. Since we were little kids.
Yeah.
There's also something—
Since we're too young to have it be talked about.
Right.
Yeah. There's something that like feels very like fun and playful when you talk about like how hot a guy that you work with is, which is like not the same when you talk about a woman.
I know, it's really wild.
So until everything's equal, I guess I'm just going to keep objectifying my
male coworkers.
Yes, I think
that's a great way to look at it. Yeah, I like that. Agreed. I like that.
Looking good, Mark. See, it works. Yeah. Everyone feels comfortable.
Yeah.
I'm not uncomfortable.
No.
You understand? No, I know I look good.
Yeah.
I'm not worried.
I want to say Mark is sporting a beard right now, and it's a good look.
It's a really good look.
You guys can probably all hear it.
Yeah, you can hear the gruffness of it, right?
You could feel we were moving on, right?
Yeah, I could feel it, but then
I
wanted to rein it back in.
Do you usually have a beard?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, he's usually beardless.
You should watch The Good Place on NBC. It's Thursdays, 8:30, 7:30 Central.
It's the smartest show on TV.
It's the smartest dumbest show on TV.
I heard it's dumb.
In a very...
Beard.
Janet, what have we learned today?
A good place was the place inside of us all along that was good.
Oh, Janet, have you been sneaking magnets again?
You've been sneaking magnets.
Oh, this podcast is available on Apple Podcasts and all major podcasting platforms, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hosted by Mark Evan Jackson.
Produced by Grant Rutter.
Written by Lizzie Pace.
That was Lizzie Pace. Mm. Music composed by David Schwartz.
Edited by Trey Booty. Booty?
Booty.
Oh, Janet.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.